Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I am very proud to bring you on Hercules and the Space Gods. Nick Curto presents the Orantia book. Greetings and welcome, Nick Curto.
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. It's great to be here. Right now in Manhattan, we're in single digits here, so we are bundled up and coping with some very, very cold weather when the wind blows. Boy, does it hurt. It really does.
I'm sorry to hear that. Here in New Jersey, right across the Hudson, it's still cold, but it's a little bit warmer than that.
Right. I think that's usual. But boy, when the wind goes, you better bundle up double because it really goes right through you. It really does.
Oh, I believe it. I lived in New York City for many decades, so I remember those days quite well. I'm looking forward to your show today, mm-hmm. and your guest is here.
Great, great. It's going to be, I think, a wonderful journey with quite an amazing man. So let us start off then. And again, thank you, Hercules. You are indeed the best producer anyone could possibly hope for, and I do mean that, as you know. So again, to our listeners out there, a very warm welcome. This is Nick Curto presents the Orantia book, which is a live 60-minute podcast. And I'm Nick Curto, your host for this evening. And the Orantia book has truly been, for me, an expansive, breathtaking experience to explore this inspiring, eye-opening, mind-expanding, and truly loving masterpiece, which is called the Fifth Epical Revelation. The text introduces the word Urantia, U-R-A-N-T-I-A, and that's the name that they give to our planet Earth, and states that the Orantia book's intent is to present enlarged concepts and advanced truth. And boy, does it ever. The book unites religion, science, and philosophy, and it's an enormous amount of material about science that's unique to literature claiming to be presented, and here it comes, by celestial beings. Among other topics, the book discusses the origin and the meaning of life, mankind's place in the universe, the relationship between God and man, and the entire life of Jesus, which is a huge amount of information that is not to be found in the Bible or any other book of any kind. And I'm telling you, when I got to that section of the book, it stopped me cold. And I recommend that to anybody who's interested in that subject. You will be blown away by that, absolutely. And it certainly opened my eyes on many levels. Now, the Orantia book has been translated, I believe, now into 28 world languages, which is quite something. It is sold in better bookstores worldwide, and you may also both read and listen to the entire Orantia book on the internet for free, and it also has on the internet websites much more important information about the book itself, and you can explore this incredible and inspiring work on the internet. And I'm going to give you two websites that I highly recommend. And when you get a moment, please take a look at them, and you'll see quite a bit about the book and what it contains. So I'm going to give you both websites. I will go slowly so you can get it right. First one is www.urantiabook.org. I'll spell it one more time. urantiabook.org. And the other website is urantia.nyc. Both of those websites are amazing and contain great amount of information. And I think that once you get in there, you're going to spend some time there because there's a lot that it contains. Okay, let's get right to it. Tonight, my featured guest for my program is a longtime reader and very active and loved member of the Orantia book community. A very warm welcome to you, Captain Robert S. Bates.
Hi, thanks, Nick.
I usually, by my friends and my enemies, get called Captain Bob.
May I call you that?
Oh, absolutely.
And I would put myself as a friend, and certainly not an enemy. No. I've been really looking forward, very much looking forward, sir, to you being on my program. And as we just said a few moments ago, there's a lot to talk about tonight. And I've already told you that I really would very much like you to do a part two and perhaps even a part three later on in a few months, because there's a lot to cover here and it's fascinating material. So I want to start off right at the very beginning. So first of all, can I ask you where your home currently is? Where are you located?
Yes, Nick. Currently I'm in Connecticut in the New London Groton area. I taught here at the Coast Guard Academy about 50 years ago, and I purchased a house, and I am in that house right now. I also have another home in Florida in around St. Augustine, so I can be a person that can go back and forth between New England and Florida.
That sounds idyllic. That's wonderful. And you're there with your wife, and what's your wife's name?
That's Katie Rose.
Katie, a big hello to you also. And it sounds like a terrific best of both worlds by having a home in both places there. That is really great. So I want to go right to the very, very beginning, Captain Bob, and ask you, where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in a little town outside of Boston, Massachusetts, called Quincy. But I was raised in Worcester, and as we said in that particular city, I'm a Worcester boy, because that's where I grew up, and not too far from where you were born either.
Right. Springfield, Massachusetts is where I was originally born and raised. And did your family have any brothers or sisters besides you?
Yes, I have one brother, Roger, who was taken away prematurely in an airplane accident. And my mom lived until about 9 years ago. She died at 102. So I'm looking
God
for
bless
some longevity
her. Wow.
here.
Yes, absolutely. That imagine what your mom has seen in her lifetime. I mean, how different the world is. That's an incredible age. Good for her. Good for her to be that old and to see so much of the world. That's fantastic.
She was a daughter of immigrants from Eastern Europe, and my dad was born in England. So we were pretty much newbies here in the U.S. of A. We don't go back to the Mayflower or those times when we had the Pilgrims and the Puritans here. We're fairly new here.
Mm-hmm. Right. As things go, yes, you can say that. And also, your mom and dad, what occupations did they have?
My mom was an at-home mom, and she was
what
I think they call a helicopter mom.
What is that? I have never heard that term.
A helicopter mom is one that monitors her children very, very closely, at home, at school, at play, and is just absolutely one of the moms that has invested herself entirely in her children.
God bless her. God bless her. My mom was like that also, by the way, just exactly what you just said.
And my dad worked for Sunoco. He was a district manager for Sun Oil Company, and he died prematurely. He died at the age of 50 up in Poland Springs on a golf course up there. So it was a heart attack. And that was many years ago, and they did not have CPR at that time.
Right. Oh, again, that was a fairly young age. I'm sorry. I have to ask you that your mom and dad, were they spiritually oriented when you were growing up? What was that like?
It was a marriage that had both Church of England on my father's side and Roman Catholic on my mother's side. In those days, it was very proper for the person who is not Catholic to sign certain documents in the Catholic Church saying that they would bring the children up Catholic. And so for the first 20 years of my life, I did go to the Catholic Church. I went to First Communion, Confirmation, and Christian doctrine in my teenage years. So I had a pretty good idea of what Christianity looked like by the time I was 20.
Right, right, right. Indeed, I can say that that was pretty much my background also. And so from that point on, I have to ask you, I know we're going to skip a little time here, but there's a lot to cover. How in the world did the Urantia book find you, or you find the Urantia book? Please tell us.
My occupation is that of a sailor. I'm a master mariner. I spent 26 years in the Coast Guard, and then I spent another 34 years in the Merchant Marine. And it was while I was in the Merchant Marine in about 1982 that I was on a ship as a mate sailing between Hawaii and Crockett, California. It was a 16-day round trip. We carried 36,000 tons of cane sugar from the islands of Hawaii to Crockett, California, to the CNH refinery there. So I stood 8 hours of watch per day, the 8 to 12 in the morning and the 8 to 12 at night, with one other person who was an able seaman. He's the quartermaster and he's the helmsman. And generally, we're with two different unions. We're from two different backgrounds. We usually have two very different levels of education. I had a master's degree in mathematics by that time, and I think he was a high school graduate. So we didn't have an awful lot to talk about. And they were boring watches, just standing watch going from Hawaii to California back and forth every 16 days. One evening, he said, "Say, mate," he said, "have you ever heard of the Urantia book?" I said, "No, I've not heard of it." And he said, "Well, I'm surprised that somebody with your education hasn't heard about the Urantia book." And I said, "Well, I haven't, Ralph." And he said, "Well, you should be able to take a look at it. You'd probably be interested in it." And I'm thinking to myself, there is nothing that this man has to offer that I'd be interested in. But in order to just kind of put it to rest, I said, "Look, Ralph, just bring it up on watch next time." And don't you know, he did, and he brought this big, huge volume called the Urantia book up, put it on the chart table, and I took it down with me to my stateroom. I had a stateroom with no roommates, and so for the next months, I had a beautiful time at sea, on time off, other than watch time, to read the entire book. So
you know, Captain,
there were no other books on board the ship.
Oh, okay.
except for operating manuals, this is a absolute anomaly that this book should have appeared in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on my chart table. I can't explain it.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. What an amazing juxtaposition from very much zero to all of a sudden everything contained in a 2,000-page book. Probably with a blue cover, am I right? A kind of a plain blue cover on it?
It was. It was a hardcover, too.
Yep. Yep. I have a book like that still. One of my, I think my first book, I have several, but one of them was exactly that. And so here you are looking at this 2,000-page book. When I first saw the book itself, I thought, it looks like a legal book to me. Who would ever actually read every single page of, well, guess what? I did maybe three or four times, and every time I read it, and I'm going to ask you the same question, I find so many things in it that I never got even the first or second time I was reading the book because it's so layered. Would you not agree with that?
Not only would I agree with it, I got to tell you, in my quest, in the papers around 73, 74, and 75, I had to go back and read it many times to be able to prove my theories that I wrote about in a book recently.
Well, I want to get into that in a little bit. That you've got my interest right away on that. When I first saw the book, again, it's 2,000 pages, so it's a thick book. And what I did, Captain, was I went to the table of contents, just trying to get a perusal of what it contained in this book, and it blew me away. The subject matter in all four major sections of the book absolutely blew me away. There was nothing in the table of contents that I wasn't interested in. Now, did you start off that way also, and did you start with chapter one, page one, or how did you approach the book?
I actually did a hunt and peck. Wherever it fell open, I would just start reading. And believe me, that was quite an adventure. Finally, I realized that I had to put sections together and then started to read sections. And I was a leader at one of the study groups, so I had to put together a plan in order to read a whole paper at a time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting, especially the way you did that. And I think that's as good as any other way to explore this book. And the more I read, the more questions I had. And I think you'd agree that after you're reading and you form a question or questions, the next paragraph or two tends to answer everything that was in your head that you wanted the answers to. Did that work for you that way?
It did. But you can't skim read the Urantia book. You have to read it like a textbook. You cannot just skim read and expect that you're going to get the answer in the next paragraph. You may have missed the question in the paragraph before.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. It's a great way, though, for the authors to give it to us that way, because they're setting it up so we do have questions, and then in the next paragraphs, they answer those questions. It's a very good advanced technique into teaching, and I was just impressed with that in itself. That was just, my goodness, that's a great way to handle some really complex issues and make the points one by one by one, and that you could understand it. Can I ask you too, sir, what questions did you want answered when you got wind of what this book contained? What was important information that you would like to know more about as you approached this book for the first time?
We don't have enough time for that. I love cosmology. I love the history. Having been brought up in the Christian ethic, I wanted to read the wonderful part four of the life of Jesus. And so it was just a great smorgasbord of wonderful papers, and you could go to any one of them, and they had my interest. I will say that the first part was rather tough sledding, though.
It is. And, you know, one thing that I've asked people, too, is that I was actually surprised at that, because I thought that usually you start light or a little bit at a time, and then you get into more complex, and then you get into more complex as you're writing a book like this. But you're absolutely correct. The beginning of the book is really daunting to try to get through it, because they're throwing terms at you and words that you don't really know the meaning of, and you're trying to learn that, and it's some heavy going. So it's interesting that they put that at the very beginning, almost kind of like, if you can get through this, you got it made, you know, but you have to get through this part of the book. So the first part of the book is exactly what you just said. It is a little bit tough going, and you have to go really slow to try to get the meaning as you go from paragraph to paragraph. And again, I agree with what you said about the part four, which is the life and teachings of Jesus. It wasn't like reading about Jesus and his family and his friends and his followers. You're there. You are experiencing them as people. That alone, you're in the picture of it. It's not like they're somewhere else on a stage or someplace and you're looking kind of at a distance. You are up close to them. Did you get that feeling also?
Yes, and I've got to tell you, there were many aha moments.
Yep. When all of a sudden, okay, now I get it. I kind of thought, but here it is in black and white, that sort of thing.
Yes, that was it. And things that I had thought were true, there were some things that were contradictory and made more sense than what I had been brought up to believe. So it was
You're right on the same page with me. That's exactly how I felt about it, too. I was raised Roman Catholic, and I did go to the confirmation and the catechism, all of that. And some of that I had a hard time with. But when I got to the Urantia papers and started reading it on that level, it all made perfect sense. And the things that didn't make sense to me, I kind of eliminated. I'm not going along with that, because what the Urantia book is saying is crystal clear. And I felt very comfortable and, enriched by what I was reading.
Absolutely. And it filled in so many gaps. When I think of the teachings that I had, it was pretty much about the birth of Jesus and the death of Jesus. It was all the stuff that was in between that really made great reading.
Oh, absolutely true. And it really brought forth what he went through in his world at the time. And it really colored it so much. It was like, I'll tell you how I liken this. Instead of having a black and white little speaker on a tiny little screen, it was CinemaScope, full color, 3D with stereophonic sound. That's the difference of what the Urantia book did for me, for the life of Jesus and his teachings. It was so in depth and so expansive. It was thrilling. It is thrilling. I love that section of the book. You said you did too, and boy, what an amazing read that is. And every time you're reading, you get something more, right? You just get a whole other level, and that's true of this whole book.
Well, most of what I did was in part three, in the science section, mm-hmm. when I really became, in many ways, a consultant to the Urantia Book Fellowship. And kind of where I actually came down upon my role as far as making a contribution to the Urantia Book Fellowship and community.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's wonderful. You felt that and you acted upon that. Again, I think the book is so inspiring that it points you in that direction on your own. You know what? I want to spread the word. I want more people to know about this because it gives me so much. It enriches my life on such a degree. I want to share that. And I think a lot of people I've talked to that are readers of the book say the same thing. They want to give that gift to others that they receive themselves. So you were connected that way. That's fantastic. Again, what kinds of things did you do for the fellowship? What was the was it all in New England, or tell me a little bit more?
Well, in about 2002, one of the readers named Robert Sarmast was exploring the Garden of Eden papers, which is paper 73 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wrote a book called The Discovery of Atlantis, The Startling Case for the Island of Cyprus. His book was used all of the old records, Enki and the World Order from about 5,000 years ago, Vishnupura, Purna, a Sanskrit text about 4,000 years ago. Of course, Genesis was written about 3,000 years ago. Then Plato came along about 2,400 years ago. Ignatius Donnelly about 140 years ago, and the Urantia book about 67 years old. And all of these texts conspired to give us a picture of what the Garden of Eden looked like, where it was, and what would be there if we found it. So Sarmast wrote his first book about the discovery of Atlantis, and then he wrote another book after our first expedition. Because I was in the maritime field, they chose me among all the Urantia book readers to be the first expedition leader for the first expedition for the hunt for the actual Garden of Eden or Atlantis.
Wow.
Or whatever it might be. So Sarmast asked me to meet him in 2002, as a Marine, merchant marine captain, and somebody who has had a lot of experience with research vessels, ocean surveillance vessels, and survey vessels, of which I've been a captain of a number of them, and asked me to lead the expedition in 2004. So we all got to Cyprus then, and we got a beautiful vessel from a local shipping company, and we spent 72 hours out there in the search for the things that were actually told we would find by the Arantia book in paper 73. And we were really successful for the
most
part.
What an adventure. You got my total interest here, Captain. Please continue.
Well, we had, first of all, three instruments that we have to talk about. One is a bathymetric scan. That is done from the bottom of the ship, and what it does is make a map of the area underneath the hull. So we were able to get a map of what this area looked like from the surface. And remember, this is about a mile down, about 1,500 meters down. And when it was revealed to us what the bathymetric scans were able to show us, we could then construct our voyage with side-scan sonar, which is bringing a sonar instrument right near the various artifacts that were still there, the great artifacts and parts of the geology that still remained, and get a really good look at it. So that went really, really well. And when we brought the information back, we had a gentleman who was a wonderful physicist, a geophysicist, analyze it and say what we had actually found. Well, one of the things we found was a low hill with that was like the Temple Mount described in the Arantia book. And if you go to Plato, you would see the same thing described in as the Acropolis Hill. And you would see the same thing described in these other documents that I had mentioned earlier. So we found those, and we found certain circular figures that were on top of the mount. We found an area that looked like were walls, but turned out to be subterranean brick conduits, as described, just like the Arantia book said. And it was really, and we found a quarry for the brick making that would be necessary to build this amazing civilization.
Wow. That's absolutely amazing. How wonderful you came across that. And that was on your very first try, was it not? The very first time you went there to try to see what you could find, and you actually had some success then.
We did. We had a great deal of success, but we really needed more information of what was underneath the silt. Well, accompanying with us was a wonderful gal by the name of Janelle Belnicki, and Janelle made a 12-minute promotional of what we had done in that first voyage. And the History Channel took note of that 12-minute, they were able to ask Sarmast if he would like to do another expedition over the same area. So 2 years later, Sarmast became the expedition leader, and with the History Channel and with their producers, we did a second voyage, this time with a sub-bottom profiler, which can actually look below the surface and give you a reading of what goes on about 30 meters below the surface. That was really the game changer, and that's what really substantiated what I wrote about in a book just 2 years ago called The Eden Atlantis Project.
Now, where can a person get that book? Is it on Amazon, or where is that sold?
Well, I'm told that it's on Amazon, but my cachet is up here in Connecticut. It's at the Parcel Center. And all you'd have to do to make a purchase is call Gary at the Parcel Center. His number is 860-739-2492. I say again, 860-739-2492. And the Parcel Center has a number of these books for sale. They're only $20, and most of the proceeds will be going to the third expedition, which I would love to get underway tomorrow if I could.
Well, you got me as a customer for one, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that also will be looking forward to seeing that book. So thank you so much. I really look forward to that. This is so exciting an adventure for you and, of course, for the people that are following your exploits. So that is really thrilling. Do you have any idea of a date or year that you're planning to go back and revisit?
Well, this depends upon finding a sponsor for the project. We were very, very had generous contributors in the Urantia Book Fellowship. Saskia Rivori and Matt Block, they were able to raise $117,000 for our first expedition. And then after the second expedition, they thought that they probably did not need to go any further, especially in view of my book. But I think that there is more to be had. So if there is a sponsor that we can entice to be able to get a third expedition, there are now much newer instruments. There are much newer things that we can use to explore this area since 2004, 2006. And I would like to get back and hopefully do some dredging, and very possibly we could even dredge up some artifacts to be able to conclusively prove our theory.
That would be absolutely thrilling. And it's just a very exciting adventure. Absolutely. I'm wondering, sir, about GoFundMe and other internet ways of raising money for very worthwhile projects. Have you had anybody help you with finding them and maybe writing a proposal, that sort of thing?
I think that's an excellent idea. I'm the sailor here. I'm the guy that runs the equipment over the side and can actually draw up a plan for a voyage. What I will need, of course, is to have somebody who is marketing. We had that back in the 2004, 2006, where we had the History Channel and the Urantia Fellowship providing the money, providing the business acumen, providing the legal assistance. One of the readers, Fred Harris, was our lawyer back then, and it was wonderful to see that all of these pieces could come together. So I'm just in the process right now of starting to rebuild a group that can offer all of this, business, marketing, legal, and maritime. And I supply the maritime end of things. So when we get these other pieces together, then we'll be ready to go, Nick. Thank you for asking.
Now, I have a couple of other suggestions. I went to the Massachusetts College of Art and Design and majored in graphic advertising design, and then I came to New York. So when I do projects, a lot of times I will look for illustrators, people that do videos, people that can write a plan, people that can do promotion, people that know how to fundraise. And there is a website that I've used perhaps maybe 10 or 15 times so far and have always come up well with that. And so if I'm looking for a particular a person with a particular talent, that's one of the places that I access. Of course, I also talk to my friends and try to spread the word out. But if I can't find it that way, I go to this particular website, and I've been really very blessed with the amount of talent. And the talent not only is in New York City or America, it's worldwide. Worldwide people from all various wonderful positions, everything from advertising to marketing to social media, it goes on and on. So I'm going to recommend you take a look at that. I'm going to give that to you, and I'll send you an email, but it's called Fiverr, Fiverr.com. And I have been so blessed with all the talented people. I'm working right now from a wonderful woman from Indonesia on a project that I'm doing. And we do it all by emailing back and forth. And we've been very successful with all these various projects that I've done. The other good news is that to do these projects in New York City, of course, it's an expensive place to live and work. I could not afford almost all of the things that I've been able to do by using the talents of this website, the people on this website. So I'm going to recommend that to you, and I'll give you some details on an email after the program that you can look at it at your leisure. But I'm going to suggest that to you because marketing is one of the categories that they've got. And fundraising, they've got people that do things like that. And the prices, again, are incredibly reasonable, shockingly reasonable. So I will recommend that to you immediately. And they also are capable of going to give you some a plan and actually enact the plan for you to go to places like FundMe, GoFundMe, or other places where you can get some substantial backing for projects. And I know people have been very successful with that. So that is just something that I want to put on the table for you because your project is so exciting on so many different levels, not just the Urantiepluk level, but on the history level, on the adventure level. I could see History Channel doing a program or programs about the exploits that you're doing. I mean, this is incredibly wonderful and exciting. So, wow, you've totally got my interest. I'm sure that the listeners tonight are also very enthusiastic about this project.
I'd like to comment on the History Channel presentation, if I might.
Sure.
Because the History Channel presentation was quite a disappointment to a lot of people, and that's kind of what made the project itself go into kind of limbo. We had Patrick Lowry was the geophysicist that we brought along with us, and he had unfortunately made a judgment that ridges that we had seen on the bottom, they looked like walls, two walls that came together at a junction. And when we looked at them initially in 2004, we thought that since the Acropolis Hill or the Temple Mount was built up by the people that lived there so that they would have a larger area for their communal services, that had gone into a slump and that it was like an earthquake or a slump or a earth slide that made these ridges. Well, when we did the sub-bottom profiler back in 2006, it turns out that this was not accumulation off of the hill, that these were actually upthrusts that had occurred in these ridges. And what they really are is part of a sewer system that they actually had created in the Garden of Eden back 37,000 years ago. It was a covered brick conduit, and it was just absolutely amazing that we should have stumbled across this. But the Urantiepluk doesn't tell you things just off of the cuff because they think it's interesting. They tell you things because they want you to find things, if you found that to be true. So they, of course, in the early days of the garden, the garbage disposal, everything they buried. But as time went on, the later establishment of a sewerage disposal system for the people in Eden, they were able to practice the scrupulous putting out of all of their waste through the sewer system across the peninsula and into the river, the Great River, which is now in Syria. And it says right in the Urantiepluk, before the disruption of the Adamic regime, a covered brick conduit disposal system had been constructed which ran beneath the walls and emptied into the River of Eden, almost a mile beyond the walls to the Garden of Eden, which were at the neck of the peninsula at the Syrian coast. So we were able to see part of this absolutely. Now we knew what it was. But in 2006, we didn't realize that those ridges were actually part of the sewer system. So Dr. Lowry reported that these ridges are cored by something natural, not man-made, when in fact it was the weakening of the Earth's crust by installing this brick-covered conduit system that enabled the sinking of Atlantis, the sinking of the Garden of Eden below the surf, to actually have this upthrust. And because they had weakened it by the construction of these wonderful brick conduit disposal systems, it had then popped up about 1 kilometer from the Temple Mount, from the Acropolis Hill. So that was missed, unfortunately, and because the homework wasn't completely done. But when he said everything that we see here is just natural, that kind of diffused the enthusiasm for finding what really was down there. So it was my book 2 years ago that actually took all of the things that we did with the bathymetric scans, with the side scan sonar, the sub-bottom profiler from the last expedition, put all of this together with all of the ancient writings and saw that it all made sense. And that the Urantia book gave us some of the best clues that we had actually found, the original Garden of Eden, which only lasted for, about 120 years before there was the default and then the move to the second Garden of Eden, which is what most people think of between the Mesopotamia between the Tigris and the Euphrates River. So that was kind of a disappointment. You could tell by the 2-hour presentation that the History Channel meant that even they were disappointed that we really didn't find anything, when in fact we did. We actually found the stuff that the Urantia book said we would find. And so that's kind of what happened, and that kind of blew the fire out at this time. So my book that came out 2 years ago is to relight that fire and say, no, we found the things that the Urantia book said would be there. We found that these people were mound builders. They had enlarged the area to make it a ceremonial place. And don't you know that Plato even picked up that, and he called it a covered hill in which these were mound builders. So we had all sorts of technology that went on there, including this incredible sewer system that went for about 90 miles and emptied out into the great river, the Kabir River in Syria. Well, of course, as time went on from the Garden of Eden, it's on the African plate, and there's three plates that come together, big tectonic plates. One is, of course, the African plate, one is the Anatolian plate, and one is the Arabian plate. And unfortunately, the African plate on which Eden rested is the one that's being subducted, pushed down, and underneath both of these other plates. So my maybe only about another 200,000 years it will have to investigate this site until it totally disappears under the Anatolian plate and the Arabian plate. So we do have a time limit, and we need to get out there and do some very serious sub-bottom profiling, side scan sonar, and actually some dredging in the area. So I hope that tells you what happened in the interim between the History Channel, and people should be able to pick up that disc. I think that's pretty much in the public domain. It was done by Josh Bernstein in a series he called Digging for the Truth, and this was Atlantis New Revelations. So it's on sale from the History Channel. I think it's in public domain now, which is this 2-hour documentary in which we were absolutely featured. But because they didn't realize what we had actually seen, that it was then a disappointment that Lowry, our geophysicist, said, no, it's all natural, there's nothing there. Well, in fact, there is something there. And so that's been the lull now for the last 14 years. So it, or 18 years. So it needs to be re-energized, and that's why I wrote the book 2 years ago, to re-energize the project in order for people that would be really willing to go to the wall for the actual third expedition and see what we can actually find there that will substantiate not only the Urantia book, but also many of the old things from Plato back to Enki and the World Order, the Sumerian texts of 5,000 years ago. It's all there if you put it together, and you'll see that what we found was aptly described by all of these other writings from the Sumerian to the Egyptian hieroglyphics to today's Urantia book, only 67 years old. So I thought that might give you an idea of your program has just been so instrumental in bringing now to the foreground the need to go out there after this hiatus and actually do some serious digging in this area, because I think your blog talk podcast is probably one of the most important thing that is HAP 2006 expedition. So hats off to you, Nick. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Captain Bob, it has been absolutely my pleasure. And I have this feeling, I'm going to be honest with you, that you're going to get the money and you're going to be successful in your next endeavor. I really feel strongly about that. And if I could do anything to help you as far as navigating the Fiverr website, if it turns out that that's one of the ways we're going to do it, count me in. Count me in. I would be happy to help you with that. It's an incredible project you're doing, and it's on so many different levels. Certainly the Urantia book which stands to gain much from your exploits and your what you're revealing, that it's really down there. But the history in general and people who are interested in archaeology and the history of that region, I mean, this goes all over the place. And I think you're going to get, as people get wind of what you have done and what you're about to do, they're going to be knocking on your door. I really feel that strongly, and I will do what I can to help you, Captain. I absolutely will. I can't wait to get your book. I will be doing that tomorrow morning. I will absolutely order that book. I want to tell people that I'm going to give you my email, my personal email address, and if you have any questions or comments you want to give me or Captain Bob, please email me that. If it's for a captain, I'll forward it to him, or if it's for me, I will answer it. So I'm going to give you my email address twice so you get it right. And here we go. I'll go slowly. Here we go. It is NICKNYNY1. And that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, NICKNYNY1, the numeral one, at gmail.com. And I certainly hope to hear from you. This podcast goes far and wide, so we'd be delighted to get feedback from you in the audience tonight. Captain, you have some websites. Would you like to give out one or whatever you want to give to let the people out there know that they can access your website? Could you slowly give them that so they could write it down?
Okay, I'd be glad to. Our website for this particular project is the without the, it's just Eden Atlantis Project, EDENATLANTIS Project, PROJECT, all one word, .org. So that's www.EdenAtlantisProject, all one word, .org. And that was put up by Byron Belitzos, who has been a longtime reader. And I have been to that website. It's a very lovely website. You will see some of the promotionals. You can download the promotional of Janelle made back in 2005 that actually got us to the History Channel, and I think you'll enjoy that 12-minute promotional. It may also link you to the Josh Bernstein production of Atlantis New Revelations done by the History Channel. So good luck with all of that, and there's lots to explore.
Boy, that's an understatement, especially coming from you, Captain. Really, yes. My goodness, what a wonderful journey of your whole life, and how one thing has led to the next, one door has opened to the next door, and I feel like you're on the verge of probably the next door, and what's going to happen is going to be so exciting for you, your family, and also for all of us out there. As you shed the light on so much history and verify some of the items in the Urantia book, for sure. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. And I think a lot of the Urantia book readers worldwide probably, when they hear this, are going to want to do something in some way to help you along on your journey, because this is benefiting everybody, benefiting every single person as you go through this amazing journey that you are on right now. The other thing I want to ask you is, would you give me a few minutes of your thoughts? We're going to be leaving shortly the program, but could you give me some final thoughts you'd like to leave with the audience tonight? It could be about the book, about your current project that you're trying to get funding for. Just give us a few minutes of that, please.
I would love to give you a quote by somebody who I respect. That his name is Herbert Spencer. People that have read the Urantia book and said, "Well, there's no proof of it," and people who have just poo-pooed the Urantia book for whatever reason. And would say, well, that's just fiction and so forth. I'd like to read this quote from Herbert Spencer. Quote, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation." So Ooh. That's Herbert Spencer. And
wow, that's
I would
great.
Say that for those that have contempt prior to investigation, I think you're missing out on a great deal. I have another quote for you, actually.
Please.
One of the listeners today actually has already texted me and said, "I listened to the blogcast. It is really good, interesting listening to his thoughts. Oh, the expedition and learning more about the Urantia book." So already we're getting comments coming in.
I'm grateful, and I'm not surprised, because what you're sharing with us about your personal life, about your profession, about your amazing journey to discovering what's really still out there, and is verifiably so, and it's just so wonderful and so exciting, and I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for us, because we're going to also get the benefits as you discover what you're going to be discovering. So it is just a win-win situation. My producer, Hercules, is so involved in history. Hercules, I'm wondering if you'd like to ask, with a couple of minutes remaining, the captain a question or comment.
No, I just want to add, coincidentally, that Byron Belitzos was the first person to mention the Urantia book on one of my podcasts over a decade and a half ago. And that our first two shows on this series of podcasts were about Atlantis. So I came across the shows earlier today, maybe 6-7 years ago.
Well, Byron has been a great friend. As a matter of fact, he was the editor of the Eden Atlantis Project book. He was a contributing editor, so his name is prominently displayed in the book here, as well as an acknowledgement, as well as an introduction, as well as a preface by some well-known authors, so, and a PhD in the marine sciences, who has all in the book has made at least a great contribution in part of the preface. So there are many things. There were also, if you would permit me, in just a few minutes that we have left, I would like to tell you that it did get worldwide acclaim for...
I think we lost you, Captain Bob.
All of a sudden, it went dead.
Huh. Yes.
It did. All of a sudden, it just stopped. I don't know what. Maybe he'll, hopefully he'll call back. Hercules, how much more time do we have? I know we're coming to the end here.
Around 3 minutes.
3 minutes. I hope he'll call back. I don't know what happened with the line there. That's just so unusual. What an amazing story. What an amazing man. And Byron is a friend, a member of the Urantia Society of Greater New York, of which I am a member. And he's a tremendous, as you know, Hercules, he's such a good guy and so informed, and just there's so much to him. He's very layered. What an amazing guy he is. So I can understand why he contributed his talents to Captain Bob's project, for sure. What an exciting project that is. My goodness. Very,
yes,
and he's
very
terrific.
Exciting.
Yeah. Wow. It's an incredible program. I've already asked him if he could do a part two. And in the springtime, we'll again have Captain Bob, if he can put it in a schedule so that we can kind of catch up and see where we are at that point. And hopefully maybe some funding will be realized for this amazing, worthwhile project of his. It is a very exciting indeed. To me, it sounds like a movie in the making, you know?
Yes, it does. And I'd be interested in learning more about it. And if he ever gets to GoFundMe up, I'd be honored to link to it so folks can be directed. I don't see him as having called back, Nick. Sorry.
Okay. Well, again, we came to the end of the program.
Is he there? Captain
I'm
Bob,
sorry. I leaned on one of the buttons on the phone. My fault.
Okay.
My bad.
I was wondering what happened. Wow.
No,
well,
it
I'm
was
glad
my
to have
bad.
You back. Well, Captain, what a wonderful story you shared with us tonight. Absolutely breathtaking concepts, and the fact that you are in the process now of trying to mount another expedition. We're going to try to see if we get some serious funding for you. I think a lot of people are going to be also rooting for you, for sure, including me. So really, it's exciting, and I in the springtime, I'd like you back for a part two, and we'll check in with you and see where we are at that point.
Nick, that would absolutely be my pleasure. And as far as I'm concerned, you and I just started a new entity for the search for the first Garden of Eden and Atlantis. So thank you so much for allowing me to come on your podcast. I'm thrilled to be able to report what we found and where we're going. And thank you for that great opportunity, Nick.
Absolutely my honor, Captain. Absolutely. A wonderful, wonderful story that deserves our total support. And I, for one, you've got it. Sign me up, man. Sign me up. Okay. So, Hercules, I think we're going to go to the end then of the show.
Yes.
And I'm just about ready to do that. So we'll wrap it up here. Captain, again, absolutely wonderful, wonderful program tonight. Thank you so much. And don't forget, folks, the Urantia book is available, urantiabook.org. Check it out. It's a great website, and you can hear the Urantia book as well as read it online. And a lot of you, I know, are going to want to purchase it because it is quite a read. It will certainly be one of the books on your, that won't be on your shelf. It will be in your bed so you can be reading it at night. So thank you so much, Hercules, for, again, being a great producer. And this is Nick Curto signing off now for Nick Curto Presents the Urantia Book. Much love to everyone out there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good night and great show.
Thank you, Hercules.